You're listening to a podcast from 702 and Cape Talk.
5 minutes after 11, we are into the last hour of today's show. And the question I'm asking this hour, is media freedom under threat? Or are journalists simply moaning too much instead of just getting on with robust contestation of ideas and power? And we are a source of power. What is truth? What is fiction? You can have your say throughout. Give us a call on 011-883-0702 in Jerseyland and in Cape Town on 021-446-0567. I'm joined in the studio by Se Mkokeli, who's wearing his CNF hat, unless someone ripped it off your hair. Sam, thanks so much for coming on. I really do appreciate it.
Thank you.
And you are in charge of media freedom, aren't you?
Yes.
If it exists.
Yes, definitely.
We'll get there in a second. Then editor-at-large at Huffington Post, South Africa, Ferial Haffagy, needs no introduction to you. Ferial, it's lovely to have you on the show again. Thanks so much for coming in.
Morning, Eusebius. Thank you for having
and
me.
And at some point, William Vorko will come and join us as well, ENCA news anchor. I don't know, do you also arrive late, Werner, when you get to Hyde Park? Hey, coming late here on my show. Friendship Liberties. How's it for you? Breathless. Don't often leave him breathless. I'm going to start by asking your just intuitive response to the question, and then we can drill down into some of the detail. Ferial, I'm going to start with you. If someone had to ask you for a pithy answer to the question, I know the real answer is a long one. What did you say? Is media freedom under threat in our country?
Hell no. I think we enjoy a wonderful media freedom, and I feel free to exercise my rights as a journalist, Eusebius.
Sam, would you agree? Y'all know. I was very surprised there by Ferial, but I like firm answers.
It's not an easy one. It's not a yes or no response. There are threats to media freedom in South Africa, but I still feel free, as Ferial does. But I mean, Andile Mngatama is one of the examples of the threats to the media freedom. There are a few other threats in the legislative framework. The ANC's bad idea for media appeals tribunal refuses to die. The environment is very hostile out there when reporters go out to collect information and they get bitten up and things like that.
Voyo, how about you? Do you think media freedom is under threat?
Well, not entirely, but there are strong signs that we are about to get into really, really tough times. I think there are people who obviously have vested interests, who don't like the things that they are doing exposed. We're talking everything from petty to grand criminals to corrupt and unethical politicians, all the way to business people who are really doing things that they shouldn't be doing or involving themselves in the sort of stuff that business people shouldn't get involved in. And those people have vested interests, but not only that, with each day that passes, they are getting more and more desperate because they know that in many cases, the media and the judiciary are basically the last line of defense for our democracy. They're going to stop at nothing from things like trying to bribe journalists not to report stories, but in the age of new media and everything going on, that is becoming increasingly difficult. And very soon, yes, I'm not being alarmist here, people are going to resort to other means, including killing people.
But then it means that there is an encroachment problem. I mean, I suppose the difficulty here, Ferial, is that the full answer to the question obviously requires robust data so that we can know when something happens like what happened to Peter Bruce.
Yes.
And it blows up because it is a huge media story. He is massive in the news as a prominent editor in this country. We report on a fellow journalist, as we rightly should. It's difficult to know whether something like that is exemplary of what happens in our work environments generally on an everyday basis, or whether it is whether these are exceptions. You know what I mean? It's very hard to get a grip on what is pattern and what is exception.
I think it's exception. And I think we can prove that with data, and the fact that it was treated as it was shows you that it's unusual, an exception, and we treated it seriously enough to go to court not once but twice. SANEF again leading us to court later this week to enforce the contempt of court finding. But sometimes I find myself to be a little myopic, South African navel gazing, thinking things are really, really bad. But if you look at Eritrea, Ethiopia, the DRC, Turkey, even the US, I think we are in better positions with regard to media freedom and our ability to enforce that freedom than many of our colleagues across our continent and in the world.
But at the same time, the exceptionalism narrative can also come back to bite us, Sam, because we also believe that we can't possibly be the next Zimbabwe, not us. Everything that happens north of Limpopo happens in another particular country. And we sometimes don't see the red flags of, as historian Vashna Jagannath puts it, authoritarian creep. So not only can we be unduly alarmist, and I take the point from Ferial, yes, but also we're also sometimes very complacent because we want to continue swallowing this myth that freedoms in this country that are hard won will automatically entrench themselves.
Yeah, there are a couple of things that are sometimes we write off as this, as something bad that happened that shouldn't have, and we don't see the pattern emerging out of that. You may remember at the beginning of the year when the parliament opened, there were a lot of our soldiers around the red carpet. Imagine a soldier carrying an automatic rifle at the red carpet. Mm-hmm. I mean, that makes you scared. I mean, so this is one of the problems that we are experiencing. It's something as simple as the opening of parliament where there is a security creep. As Zuma delivered his State of the Nation address, some journalists were not allowed to leave the chamber or the press gallery to follow the EFF guys who were kicked out of parliament. They couldn't even tell that story. I mean, us stood outside there. There were a lot of police officers who blocked our way. We couldn't follow Musi Maimane around. So it makes our job slightly difficult. But we have to be very careful. I mean, this is a red flag we have to spot immediately.
Absolutely. So what we do agree on, of course, Vuyo, is that whether these are patterns or individual incidents, the kind of threats that we've seen that journalists have experienced because of the thuggery of BLF, we need to respond to it. What is the best way to respond to that? Because journalists themselves, we can't agree. If you are in that WhatsApp group of ours, we can't agree. Do you just take it on the chin and say, you know what, let's accept that people will maximally come after our commentary, broadcasting, our reportage, and that's just part of the course. The flip side of the power that all four of us have is, of course, people will come after us. Or do you take it seriously and say, I mean, you know, arrest the guy, jail him?
No, I think it's precisely because we've become very intolerant of things we shouldn't tolerate that our country is where it is. And that doesn't only apply to journalists. I think it applies to everyone across the board, business people, teachers, nurses, everyone from whatever space you occupy in society. And that, to me, is what has to stop and has to stop now. Because once we start being tolerant and trying to be rational, you know, about stuff, and then people find other ways and means. I mean, we didn't know, not too long ago, we didn't know that, the Guptas were up to what they have been up to, that they have employed this, you know, PR company at huge amounts of money. And if, I'm not saying that would have stopped it, but if we were intolerant, you know, of sort of the initial, what the things they did initially, perhaps we would not have been where we are today. The same applies for the stuff that parliament or parliamentarians have had to tolerate, you know, until, you know, people like EFF and so did what they did, which, again, we were a lot ambiguous about, you know. Is this the right thing that they're doing? You know, what about the decorum of parliament? No, they are being, you know, rascals now. You know, they should, it's that sort of
But there's
stuff.
A technical question here, though. I mean, I don't know if you guys agree with Vuyo. How do you, it's always very hard to know strategically whether to take from your toolkit of soft power or whether you use hard power. I saw this lovely meme a couple of months ago that says, don't F with writers, we will describe you. Yes. And it's very cool, but of course there's also a limit to how much I can write BLF away. Mm. So how does one get that mix right of hard power versus soft power, as it were?
I completely disagree with the often held and often espoused view that if we just ignore Andile Mngatama and the BLF, they will go away. I don't agree with that view that we shouldn't cover their press conferences, that they shouldn't get airtime. I think that's, but fundamentally undemocratic, because they're a part of this society. I think they should be challenged, and as we are doing now, when they become intimidatory and violent, challenge them in court. But many years ago, when City Press, we were covering Julius Malema when he was still in the Youth League, people said, if you just stop covering him, he'll go away. No ways.
Absolutely. Sam, you haven't yet weighed in on this particular one. I mean, how hard do you go after these folks, or do you just cover their press conferences? I mean, I've seen some interesting debates between our media peers. Is it wrong for Shahan Vuyo's colleagues at ENCA to be interviewing Andile, as he has done in the last week, or not? And I've had one or two people on my platform, like Mzwanele, and not all of my colleagues thought that it was kosher for the man to be in the building. So how do you treat these figures that seem to be encroaching on our freedom? Or do you just silence them?
Now, we shouldn't have a rigid rule about covering Andile Mngatama and the BLF. But for me, it goes down to a very basic news judgment call. I mean, if I was a news editor, I wouldn't assign a reporter to go and cover Andile Mngatama, because it brings nothing really to the debate. And so as a basic news call, that's what this way it ends. Tlhaudi Motsoeneng was allowed to have 2-hour-long press conferences that added no value, none whatsoever. I saw one of the very serious newspapers in South Africa having Tlhaudi Motsoeneng on page one the one day, and I wonder, my goodness, I mean, what is going on here? So Andile Mngatama to me is really belongs in that box, same as for news judgment itself. But what he's doing is quite problematic. So we can't write it off altogether to say it has no impact. When they go and attack Peter Bruce at home, it sends a message to Sipho in Durban, who works for the Mercury, that he mustn't write about the corruption at the Thekwini Council, because he will have BLF outside his house. When they call you askaris, and it sends a message to somebody out there that who might not be able to withstand that kind of targeting, labeling, and that pressure, that they mustn't do the kind of stories that our constitution wants of us as journalists, to tackle difficult stories without any fear. So this is what's happening here. We can't write it off and saying it doesn't really matter. Would be derelict as a sector if we didn't take on Andile Mngatama and use the criminal justice system, because it's there. This is about the rule of law. I mean, this is anarchy we're watching here, and we can't let it go and say we'll fold our hands or we'll describe him. It doesn't end there.
Okay. Before
but
we
take it's it's about whether or not, you know, to cover them, because remember, in so many respects, these kinds of elements represent other interests. Behind them are the people who either pay them or whose support they enjoy to do whatever it is that they want to do in life. So it is about dealing with the people behind them as well. There is no Andile Mngatama who's going to stand up or do the sort of things that he's been doing all on his own, or simply because he just is just against white monopoly capital, you know. And so it is important to stay focused and not see it as something that is about promoting him or his ideas. But of course, the how-to part is what is critical. How then do you cover them?
Fair enough. Before we take a break, Farrell, can you just for us unravel a little bit some of the other threats to media freedom that may or may not be real, but that we should be vigilant about?
Sure.
Andile Mngatama is not the only one that should be framing this conversation. So, for example, I'm thinking there are non-physical threats to our journalism that is a little bit more hidden for the public, such as economic pressures that often get in the way. I mean, if the four of us started a newspaper, I am pretty sure that if we started that with money, if we win the lottery tomorrow, hopefully in pounds or in euros, that the kind of newspaper we'd bring out is probably more going to be like That Day try to be, or The Weekender try to be, than one where we need to answer to shareholders, for example. That is a silent threat to journalism as well.
Absolutely. I think economic pressures, and we see it all the time on the media pages now, are coming right to the forefront, where editors get fired, where there is an increasing pressure, where the Chinese wall between advertising and editorial is being eroded every day. It was the story of the SABC as well. It's been the story at many, many places. So as this digital disruption knocks us silly, I think we're entering that phase where the journalism that moves the country, moves the world, it's increasingly philanthropic, Amabungani, Daily Maverick, where there isn't such astounding commercial pressure. But the other one I wanted to talk about that we're only just beginning to understand is what Maria Ressa has called the weaponization of social media, where I think in a world of repression 2.0 is social media is the most powerful media now, and the threats there are ones we've only just beginning to understand in South Africa.
20 minutes after 11, let's take a bit of a break. You've heard from my guests so far. How do you see it? Do you think media freedom is not really under threat? And what do you make of the more precise questions? How do you respond to thuggery? How do you respond to economic journalism? How do you feel about the quality of South African media that you're seeing? Give us a call and have a conversation with Sam Kokeli, Feral Hafaji and Vuyo Mvoko, who are my guests this hour, 21 minutes after 11.
Eusebius is on Twitter, at Eusebius.
The SABC 8 sounds like a relic from fighting apartheid. Unfortunately, that is a bit of language that is part of our democratic conversation. And I want to play this clip of SABC journalist Kravani Pillay when she appeared before Parliament. And that was obviously looking into the circumstances under which some of the most horrific encroachment on media freedom has been happening at the SABC.
Parliament let us down. The board let us down. The minister let us down. Our acting GCO at the time, Jimmy Matthews, let us down. All of these people sold out journalists and sold out journalism. For example, Mr. Matthews has an illustrious journalism career. He's worked his way up from a cameraman to a reporter to a producer, etc. But when he got to the position of acting GCEO, it was like all of that was out the window, in his words. Take the window or take the door. The minister failed us. She interfered unlawfully. Mr. Motsweneng certainly failed us. It was like he didn't have a clue what was in the Broadcasting Act. The board failed us because they allowed Mr. Motsweneng to unilaterally do what he wanted. With all due respect, Parliament failed us. On the 23rd of August 2016, members of the Portfolio Committee on Communications sat back and just accepted what the board said. And they called us names in that hearing or in that meeting, and nobody stood up. They called us unethical, and they called us liars. We've been through enough already. We're not prepared to put the gauntlet down just yet. We're in for the long haul.
That's Kravani Pillay. Absolutely love her work. We've been good friends for this since Rhodes, where many good journalists come from. Vuyo, I wonder whether the tide is turning here. Are we all so desperate for the public broadcaster to play the role that it should? And I think sometimes in the commercial media, we make it seem as if we have less of a social responsibility to provide pro-poor, pro-social justice journalism. Obviously, we don't. But it's hard to exaggerate, almost as a social movement like the ANC is in politics, the place of the SABC when it comes to media in this country, because it is a primary access point for information, debates, knowledge for a majority of the country's citizens. I see some of the newspapers this morning, I don't know if that's the ones that you were subtweeting, Sam, focusing how on Schlaudy may not get his pension. We're desperate for good news. What is your sense?
Well, I think there are several reasons why the SABC is important. It includes, well, its basic mandate, which is to, you know, transmit news, you know, so many South African languages to millions of South Africans. That is very important, and that should continue. For the same reasons that those of us who work in the commercial media, we tend to, you know, cream off you know, put like very little resources, you know, and not really go. Yes, the SABC is perhaps not going as far as it should in rural areas and underserviced communities, but it does do that to a very large extent, like nobody else does in this country. So for that reason alone, it is an important institution. But it is also important because how the how parliamentarians, you know, both the legislature and the executive, do their job to a degree, the SABC is a measure. You know, of whether or not they are doing what they are supposed to do, or whether in fact their attitude towards broadcasting in particular and journalism in general is not, perhaps not to say a correct one is a wrong one, but where it should be. Are they moving with the times? Are they progressive? Are they true to the values, you know, that they, all of us, espoused as we sought to destroy apartheid and build a new and progressive country? So there are a number of reasons. And to do, in fact, even what Saudi claimed to be doing, which is to look after the welfare of your artists and so on. But how he went about doing it and what motivated him to do it was all misplaced and actually wrong. It was for all the populist reasons. But the fact that he knew that to press that button would give him a degree or some mileage, you know, and approval, especially from our artists who are not, one is not saying we should have the kind of state that looks at after everyone who can't either think for themselves or get up and do something, you know, for themselves, but they have a role to play, and the SABC too.
But now, what are the chances of it playing that role as Shlaudi's shadow still looms large over Auckland Park? Because my thing is, it doesn't take rocket scientists or a management consulting expert or organizational culture to know that when bad habits have become part of the organizational DNA, getting rid of one person may be necessary, but it's far from sufficient to mean that that is the end of sunshine journalism. When we listen to Krivani, and the reason we chose that particular clip is because she was telling you how many people disappointed her.
Yes.
And that's a lot of people.
And mind you, it's not the first time. As Ferial Hafaji would tell you, you've had boards there, you know, during the former President Thabo Mbeki's two terms. That's how Snooki went back. That's when Snooki went back to the SABC, and he did pretty much what Saudi did. And before then, even when former President Nelson Mandela was in charge, I mean, there were calls made to, you know, the people who were in charge at the SABC. So it's not been all sort of hunky dory. And even during when, I remember when I left the SABC, like for the first time, among the people who had issues with were board members, the people who came forward to say, we can actually help you and you will stay here, but only if you do ABC, you know? And this is not as corrupt, in inverted commas.
Farrell, I want to draw you in here, but it's 11:30. Sure. My apologies there for you.
Eusebius Mackayser on 702 and Cape Talk.
Farrell, what's important about, obviously, the institutional memory, I won't call him a veteran because that's a euphemism for old, of Putvuyo, is that it's amazing how these things come and go almost every generation. I mean, and you know it as well as he does about the SABC. So are we approaching the public broadcaster and its place in the country appropriately in terms of reversing what has been acculturated as bad habits? Because one person going is good news, but it doesn't mean that you have dealt with organizational issues.
Absolutely. So I worked there even before Butfuyo, and then it was a real like Prague Spring, hey, under Zwelakhe Sisulu and that first team. And it was the most unencumbered time where I truly felt free as a public affairs journalist to tell the story of this new South Africa we were making. Very soon, the infringements, encroachments did start to happen. And obviously, it is institutional. I remember once on another show, you told me off because I had done quite a sweetheart interview with Jimmy Matthews. And I'm interested that the interim board is recasting the entire editorial policy. But my biggest takeaway from what's happened at the SABC is the bravery of people to speak up and retake that institution. It's made me profoundly hopeful, and I think it's a microcosm of how the whole country is going to have to be recaptured.
Absolutely. I want to play a clip here from JZ and what he thinks of journalism. Very, very small. So if you blink, you could miss it on TV. If you are not listening or scratching your inner ear, then you will miss it. So listen very carefully.
When I'm in South Africa, every morning you feel like you must leave this country. Huh? Because the reporting concentrate on the opposite of the positive.
Okay, I'm going to come back to that in a second. First, I want to take a caller. Thabo, good morning.
Yes, UBCBS, how are you, my friend?
I'm good. Let me just ask my guests to put their headphones on so that they can also hear you. And then you can tell us what is on your mind. Thank you for your patience, Thabo. Go ahead.
Yes. UBCBS, I will say media freedom sometimes, you know, leads to being reckless in reporting. They are reporting good on other stories, but I'm going to give you guys an example of what we woke up reading on the news, online, on Facebook, on everywhere on the social media. We lost Sekeleke, known as Anthony Mutaung, but media reported that Mixen Tolo Sekeleke, because we have two guys who look alike. We have Anthony Mutaung, who has passed away, and we have Mixen Tolo, who is still alive, but that guy was reported dead. Also, the pictures which were published on media are the pictures belonging to Mixen, who's still alive. And the video circulating also, it's for Mixen. And then I will maybe request for journalists and all publishers, before publishing news, to verify with families of those people and names and stuff, so that we don't hook up, because I have more fans that are asking me, and I'm busy now correcting on my page, that the person who died is not Mixen, is Anthony Mutaung.
Okay, can I ask you a question back, Thabo?
Yes.
How often do the media have the wrong picture with the wrong name?
I will say 10%.
Okay. So is this particular example one that is personally important to you, or were you calling in because you were trying to point out a pattern of problems?
This one is very important because we are talking about the death of a person.
Okay, well, I'm going to connect it to the JZ comment and take Thabo's remark in the spirit in which he means it, Sam. Are we sometimes our own worst night enemy as journalists, in the sense that when we drop the ball in terms of the quality of our journalism, verifying, triangulating, all that good stuff we were taught in journalism schools, or if we are, as JZ says in that clip or implies, relentlessly negative, is that when our exercise of media freedom reliably comes under scrutiny? We don't like the exercise of our media freedom to be evaluated by the public.
I'm sure, ECBS, many people out there would celebrate if the president acted on his threat that the media is so bad that he wants to get up and leave South Africa. And he's hardly a good example on most intellectual debates, and he doesn't set the bar. And he wields a lot of power, and he does suffer from the brutal media coverage. And, of course, a lot of bad things is done, a lot of bad things he has been accused of. I mean, he is the crown on that state capture narrative. So he's really a bad contributor to the debate. But, I mean, the issues are there. We make mistakes, and that really, a lot of real and justified questions about the role we play. And there have been a few examples where we aired, and the Huffington Post, for example, this the story of Virashnia Pillay, who lost their job eventually because there are consequences when people make mistakes. There's a very functional system of the appeal system and the ombuds system. I remember recently, UCBS, you lost a case yourself.
And hey, I'm appealing that one. I'm going to win the appeal.
You see? So the system, we get...
But you're right. The system, the self-regulation that is there certainly functions. But some of the public think that self-regulation is not enough. That even if Ferial says she gets... when Ferial says, nothing embarrasses me more than a retraction on page one of Mail and Guardian or City Press, that it happens so often, you weren't truly embarrassed. They say that we lie that we are embarrassed when the self-regulation, even if I lose my appeal, I mean, this little, the press ombuds really doesn't have much teeth. I'm not going to lose my job. It's very unlikely.
No, I disagree with you, Eusebius. Those things were not simply embarrassing. They have manifold consequences within an organization. You have to keep taking your team through every single finding against you. If your colleagues contrive quotes, you have to teach them how to use anonymous sources properly. You have to keep going through those systems. And really, I find the systems become incredibly muscular and deeply, deeply painful, like a proper system of justice should be.
You know, you can't lie to me. I'm going to look you deep in the eye. Honestly, you've worked in print and in broadcasting. How scared are you really of a press ombud ruling? Awkward. Exactly.
It just becomes one of those things. But to one other point I wanted to make, to say our fault does not end with publishing the wrong picture against the wrong name or a retraction. There's something, or there are things that go a lot deeper. And one of them is our own complicity. In places like the SABC, for example, where journalists self-censor, where you duck even before someone, you know, says, I'm about to hit you.
Sure.
You know, and that has been one of the biggest challenges facing journalists, especially in public broadcasting. But it applies to, remember how people celebrated the fact that Kolani here took, you know, the bosses on, you know, the one morning. It's worth a celebration because it's something that people don't expect. Mm. That they basically saying, we sing for our supper. Mm. You know, yeah, of course, to varying degrees. But that is a fact. In fact, that is one of the major contributors to the set of problems that the media or journalism has.
But the what I was trying to get at, Sam, with the question is, I agree with you. I mean, JZ is the worst poster child for someone who is getting the wrath of bad journalism. Not at all. But I think the deeper conversation is around whether we are in the habit of accepting criticism on the chin about how we frame stories, whose stories we tell, whose stories we don't tell, what our political, ethical, and other biases are, whether they be intentional biases or just things that reveal themselves unintentionally. You may be shocked to find that 50 out of the last columns you wrote were all about the EFF, and meanwhile you thought that you write equally about all parties, for example. You know what I mean? So are we a bit precious in general about critiques of the content of our work and don't distinguish between genuine threats like a thug wanting to throttle you, and someone just really wanting to say, listen, Eusebius, I'm sick and tired of your liberal rants every single day. How about a little bit of Marxism one of these days?
It's an important point you're raising there. We really have to distinguish between legitimate criticism of the media and the things that we do and the things we do not do versus the anarchy that Andile Mngatama represents. I mean, if you look now, one of the stories that are dominant in the media space is the state capture and grand corruption scheme. It's coming out in 2017, but these are events that happened around, some of them going back 10 years ago. And if you had to go to the files and to see the kind of journalism we were doing then, we were worrying about Graham Smith, the former Protea captain, as to who he was marrying, who he was dumping and via an SMS. So these are an embarrassing moments for us, and that we missed this. We're going on with this story now because there are Gupta emails. It's really wonderful that we are publishing them, but you do wonder what is our original contribution to the story. Did we investigate at the time? I mean, the issues were there. When the Guptas captured cricket in South Africa, we knew about it at the time. What did we do? Did we not see any problem? As Avuyo was saying, we were tolerant of things that we should not have tolerated. This is just across the board. But there have been other examples about the role of these instruments, like the New Age, 8 and 7, that have been brought up to cause a great deal of confusion. So we should be tolerant of that criticism because we need it. We play in the open space and we really do deserve it.
Okay, let's go back to the lines. I've got a call. By the way, do you get a pension for being founding editor, or you left too soon?
I forgot about that. Yeah.
We all have a past, Ferial. Mpo in Randfontein. How's it, Mpo?
Well, my brother, how are you?
I'm very good, thank you.
Yeah, no, I thought I must ask this question, and that whether journalists are ideologically neutral, I sometimes feel they have views, and sometimes those views override other people's views to a point that they dominate the discussion and tilt you to believe them. When in actual facts, I suppose there must also be balance. Sometimes I hear you are extremely balanced on getting views and getting people to...
But I'm not balanced, Mpo. I know you're trying to compliment me. I want to know from you, and I will take a break, and then this is a nice, juicy... big final question for my guest to get into. I pride myself on being biased. I'm just honest about it. I am a culturally colored, politically black, openly gay, race realist, liberal egalitarian, if you must have a full description that I can't get into one tweet. I'm not biased at all. I mean, I'm not objective at all. Yeah, well, so my question to you is, as a consumer of media, does it bother you that journalism is subjective?
It does, because at the point where you expect them to appreciate other people's view, and the point I'm making about you being balanced is that you don't kill other people's views that they're totally wrong, therefore they can't make a point. It's a useless point. So I'm saying it's important that we allow views to come in, and you can still do what you are.
I get you, yeah.
But you don't say...
Yeah.
You are therefore useless. And I think the lady made a good point earlier on, who said when Julius was still in the ANC youth league and he was pushing the boundary for new things that are not conservative, people felt, this is nonsense. Who is this person?
Yeah.
And therefore, let's not repeat them. And when you go into media and discover they're coming for rubbish now. That's the name
and
opportunity.
Okay, fair enough. Listen, I want to take a break there, but your point is well taken. And this is a debate that we keep coming back to you as media professionals, questions of bias, balance, subjectivity. We'll take a break, and then we'll start with the lady on this one.
Eusebius Mkhize on 702 and Cape Talk.
For real, some people think that we abuse our media freedom by... being very subjective. And there's two aspects there, and it's obviously we'll need more than 10 minutes to ventilate, but let's have a crack at it. I mean, the first debate, which you know every generation of journalists have, is there such a thing as objectivity? But then there's another debate, related but slightly different. If we accept that Ferial can't leave who she truly is as a complete person at the door when she enters the workplace, is it a bad thing that our journalism also reflects some of our value systems, etc.? The big thing for me is always that the public should have choices.
Absolutely. I think very many years ago, because I started at the Weekly Mail, I always come from the view that we are not objective ciphers of news. We come from places. We are subjective. We have values and we have beliefs. My own introspection has come from many years of being told that you treat the public sector and the private sector differently. So what I've spent much of the past year doing is studying Do we do that, you know? So do we give the markets an easy ride? Why wasn't Pick n Pay firing so many people when last year it said it was going to create 5,000 jobs a year? Why isn't that as big as the Gupta leaks? Land, like the gentleman said earlier, how is wealth really owned? Is it 97% white, 3% black? Why haven't we done more? I feel like occupied by that, because I think for many years I've been told, like, you don't do your work properly. So I seek to answer those questions.
Those particular examples that you give, do you think that they are true of us as quote-unquote mainstream media?
Absolutely. I think we are often can be market lackeys, and that's because corporations are so wealthy and so powerful and have so many spin doctors that we don't question the fundamentals of them often enough. And personally, I'm trying to learn to do that more, to give myself the tools to do that, because something very wrong happened in our country in these 24 years that our economy doesn't look different. Mm-hmm. And I think the private sector has questions to answer.
Wow, that's a very powerful bit of self-examination, Vuyo. Do you agree with that description of the patterns of implicit bias, if we don't want to say it's intentional?
I agree. Fortunately or unfortunately, Wikimedia is also my alma mater.
Yes.
You know, and I think, one, it's the right thing to do, to be open about who you are and the things that you stand for, and acknowledging the fact that, as you said, you can't leave that stuff at the door when you walk into the newsroom. And it was for that reason, in large part, that, for example, when, now that the New Age was mentioned, you know, we were open, we were upfront about who we were or we were going to be and how we were going to practice our journalism. And it is for that reason, I think, the caller sort of appreciates what you do, because you open about it, and whenever they read or listen or watch, they know where you are coming from. And at the end of the day, you try to strike, you know, the balance. You try to be fair, but I mean, there's no hiding really who you are.
I want to know what balance and fairness means in tandem with acknowledging our inherent subjectivity. But before we maybe end on that question, Sam, let's just be a bit speculative and honest at the same time. Why do many of us, many of our peers, I don't know, I don't think this is true of you, by the way. I think, like me, you are very authentic in your questions, your feelings, your viewpoints as a journalist, and I think that's par for the course. But why do many people struggle to own up to the kind of biases and subjectivities that Ferrell and Vuyo is talking? Is it because in our heads there's this idea that good journalism means detached journalism? Where does it come from? There's this fear that no one will respect me if I say I have a view, I have ideological commitments, I'm a communist, I'm a liberal, I'm a libertarian, or whatever you might be.
I mean, it's really short-sighted to believe that journalists are not influenced by a number of things. Their worldview is shaped by a number of things. It could be their values, it could be ideology. I mean, these are the things we don't leave at home when we come to work, as Ferrell says.
Yeah.
We want more of that. And really, it's unfortunate in the South African landscape that the New Age has become what it was not articulated as when it came out in 2010. I was at Business Day at the time, and we were worried when Vuyo and Karima and Vukani Mde put together what promised to be a very, very good team.
Yes.
That was going to give us a tough time in telling the South African story. They had these great political journalists, and they promised to cover South Africa, going to the bottom of the system, to cover local municipalities and to cover provinces and life in the different provinces, and tell a South African story. I don't know if their glass was half full or half empty, but it promised...
But I think between you and me, the budget was awful.
But I mean, I was a political editor at Business Day at the time, and I had to come up with a counter strategy. What do you do when this thing comes up? It's quite, it's very good for the reader,
yes,
for a landscape that is diverse and people who own up to their ideological commitments.
Sure. What I'm passionate about, Ferrell, is redirecting, and I don't think it's just a language, a verbal disagreement, redirecting then, how do we know what is good journalism? Because for me personally, I don't think good journalism can be journalism that is written from a place of deeply subjective values. But if you employ me as a staff writer, okay, columnist is easier because there's a clearly I have a right to be obviously subjective. But let's say I come and work for you as a political reporter, for example. What will be my KPIs? You know, you're getting this liberal guy who's left leaning on questions of race, social justice. But how will you measure whether I'm still a good journalist, even though you know my subjectivity?
You asked earlier about balance and fairness. So I think that you want to give half the airtime, or if you're writing a 1,000-word story, 500 words must be the other view that you don't agree with, so that your readers have absolute fairness, half the time, half the space. But I think something we don't pay enough attention to, which is that I'm such a big fan of the moth and storytelling, I think we sorely lack narrative. And our country, beautiful, fractured as it is given to narrative. So that's what I would like to see more of.
How about you, Vuyo?
Well, my biggest preoccupation at the moment is journalism, the kind of journalism that we're seeing practiced in both in the public broadcasting space broadly, and I'm not talking only about the SABC. I'm also talking about your community broadcasters, most of whom are now, as it has turned out, at the mercy of politicians who have found a new space to manipulate and perhaps create what they have been, or they have been prevented from doing in places like the SABC. And I think you're talking like public broadcasters, like television. At some point, you're talking between 10 and 12, I think, million people who have access to it. That's a big, big market. And from what I'm picking up, the politicians are getting into that space big time. And very soon, what is happening at the SABC will be happening there too. And given the commercial broadcasters' inclination to try and do a lot more with fewer resources and not getting what we should be getting, I think that's the space to watch and perhaps to really do something about.
Okay, this has been the fourth in a five-part series that we're going to have in the media. We have one more. I must say it's been the most optimistic one in terms of tonality, and I thought you were all going to come here and be snot en trane crying about a lack of freedom. I leave the last word in 30 seconds to you, Sam, just on a more newsy note, wearing your hat as part of SANEF. I hear you guys want to throw Klitama in jail. What's the latest?
Yes, we have filed papers. We're going back to court and really asking the court to do its job and give us a judicial protection from this guy. If he goes to jail, and it's within the provisions of the law.
Okay, thank you so much to all three of you for coming, and I thoroughly
thank
enjoyed it.